RV Family Travel Atlas is sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Get an RV policy quote by calling 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visiting progressive.com/RV. And by Jellystone Parks. To find a campground near you, visit campjellystone.com.
And by the Good Sam Auto and RV Club. For a special offer, visit goodsam.com/RV Family Travel Atlas. And by RV Trader. To sell your RV, visit rvtrader.com/sell and use the code RVFTA5OFF for a special discount. Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we write about RV and family travel with our three boys, Theo, Max, and Wes.
You can read about our adventures at rvfamilytravelatlas.com. And you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
On this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas, we are taking you to the Lowcountry and sharing all the details of our amazing trip to Charleston, South Carolina. This region has a dreamy combination of outdoor activities and urban culture, all set against a fascinating historical backdrop.
We reviewed the campground at James Island County Park on this week's episode of Campground of the Week. Now we are going to give you the rundown on everything else in this top RV destination. Beaches, markets, tours, forts and plantations, plus all the planning resources you need.
You might think RVing is about getting as far away from the city as possible, but we know that urban areas can be some of the best RV destinations out there. You are listening to episode number 87, Greetings from Charleston, South Carolina.
Before we head into this week's feature topic, greetings from Charleston, South Carolina, it's time for our RV FTA News Roundup, which is sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
And Progressive Insurance wants you to know that you can keep all your stuff protected with personal effects. This is an optional coverage, and they'll pay to replace damaged, lost, or stolen personal items in and around your RV. To learn more, call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visit progressive.com/RV for more info.
I want some of this kind of insurance.
Just planning on losing things? You want to be covered on that
According
front?
To you, I just always lose things.
You do, so maybe this
when
isn't
I
our best interest.
When I saw the word lost here, that they cover lost things, it was like an insurance epiphany for me.
Yeah, that's my kind of insurance.
But it's really, I want it not because I lose things, but because of my fancy camera equipment that I've been buying.
Yeah,
I want to get it insured.
Yeah, you have been buying that fancy equipment, but you're not the only one. I think a lot of RVers travel with
gear.
Our gadgets
gear
and our
and
gear
gadgets.
These days. Yeah, so it's probably a good idea. We'll look into that.
Stephanie, tell us now about our Hump Day giveaway winner this week.
All right, so this week we showed the Jack Rack on Instagram for a giveaway. And Brett Nielsen reviewed this on our spring gear guide. It is this system of straps that turns a kid's jacket into a backpack so that instead of handing you the jacket, they can wear it on their back when they get too warm.
And there lies the genius of this product is that you don't have to carry five backpacks if you have five kids.
Yeah, so who won that?
RT Newell is the winner of the Jack Rack. So we will message RT. And we'll get your address and we'll send you that Jack Rack. Now, Stephanie, we have a couple really big save the date type announcements. So why don't you walk us through the first one? This is like a historical moment in RVFTA Podcast Network history, if there is indeed such a thing.
Yeah, so it's time for us to ask you to save the date for the RVFTA Fall Rally. Now, here comes.
That's not historical.
No.
We've had a fall rally before.
Right. Well, guess what? There's going to be two RVFTA fall rallies happening simultaneously in two different parts of the country on the weekend of October 21st through the 23rd.
Now, where are these dual RVFTA rallies going to take place, Stephanie?
All right. So, of course, one is happening in the Northeast up by us, and we will be releasing all of the specific campground details in the future. But another one is going to be happening down by our correspondent Travels with Birdie, i.e. Carrie Cox, who is hosting a Missouri rally.
We have a powerful RVFTA fan base in Missouri. A lot of people in Missouri like our podcast.
Or they're just the ones.
Don't ask me to explain that. Or they're just smart.
Well, they're just the ones asking for a rally all the time. They're always like, when are you coming to?
And some of them have been meeting up at campgrounds and meeting up at librarian conventions. It's time to rally. Now, when you say that these two rallies are going to happen simultaneously, does that mean we're going to light the campfire simultaneously? Like we'll put in a call to Carrie and say, Carrie, let's light the campfire.
I don't
count
know.
To five.
No, because we are about RV and family travel, which means that nothing
no
is going to happen according to a schedule. But we are so happy that Carrie has agreed to host an RVFTA rally in the Midwest. It's going to be in the Missouri area. Then there's also going to be one up here in the Northeast, October 21st to 23rd. We will give you all the campground details in the future, but right now, if you want to attend, put it on your calendar. Now, we have another really, really exciting save the date.
I would say equally exciting. I am pumped and excited about this.
We are going to be returning to the Florida RV Super Show in 2017. That is from January 18th. Through the 22nd of 2017. And we couldn't be more thrilled to be going back to the Super Show.
So we'll be making a whole podcast about the Super Show again. We'll be camping at the fairgrounds. And we're hoping that you decide to do the same. That you actually, we're not going to have an official rally of any kind, but we are going to be there camping at the fairgrounds. And we just want you guys to come too. Show up, rent a site.
Right. So the registration for camping at the fairgrounds is going to be opening later this summer. It opens in around like later July. And we are going to keep you posted on that on the show. We're going to tell you everything you need to know about registering to camp there like we are camping. And they, you know, the Florida RV Trade Association, they put on tons of activities. There's like breakfast every morning. So we're going to be involved in all that and it's going to be super fun.
Yeah. And the thing with like the Florida RV Super Show to me is it's really like a celebration of the RV lifestyle, and they just happen to also be selling RVs there. You know, it really just like the whole experience really embraces sort of our love for RVing.
All right, so if you want to come and meet us there, January 18th to the 22nd, put it on your calendar. All right, so those are your save the dates. Now, on to what's going on this week. If you missed it, this week on Campground of the Week, that's episode number 26, we did a complete review of the campground at James Island County Park, which is where we stayed when we explored the Charleston area. So we are not going to review that campground on this episode. We're kind of pairing these episodes together.
Snazzy idea, if you ask me.
And the campground reviews over there on Campground of the Week. And now we're going to tell you everything else about our trip to Charleston.
And if you put these two episodes together, it's going to give you a panoramic kaleidoscopic understanding of the Charleston area.
I think you just have to call quits. Can you edit that?
No, or are you going to leave
think
it?
So. Okay. I'm going to leave that.
So listen to both, you know, and if you haven't subscribed to Campground of the Week yet, please do so.
All right. Now for our forum thread of the week, I wanted to draw your attention to the thread that popped up on themed trips, because our episode last week was all about creating themed RV trips instead of just having a destination in mind. It was about really exploring some sort of theme on your RV trip instead. All right. So we got lots of different responses from our forum members, and some of them were really great ideas. So Erica said that her wife and kids want to do a Major League Baseball stadium tour.
And as do we.
Yeah.
I mean, when the boys get a little older, that is going to go to the top of the list.
Yeah. And another thing for there is, just so everybody knows, minor league stadiums are awesome places to go and visit when you're traveling also. So look into that when you're traveling.
And we also, both of us, love urban camping. So the idea of trying to get close to cities like Chicago, New York City, Boston, to do the baseball stadiums and to have an RV trip, very attractive to me.
Yeah. And Jersey Camper said they love factory tours. They said, any factory tour where you get to see something made, like from potato chips to Boeing 787s, right? He said, we love those. And I thought that's a real another really great way to explore some industrial areas, you know, to go and to see what's made in a region. So that's fun. And then Carrie Cox, she linked to an awesome map that was full of literary road trips. It's a really good link. If you go into the thread, click on that link, and it's a fun little infographic. And then she also mentioned the Lewis and Clark and the Oregon Trail.
I'm really into the idea of doing some literary road trips. I don't know if that's something we'd want to do with the kids or if that's more like when we're traveling alone at some point, we could go visit, you know, the birthplace of Faulkner, the birthplace of Hemingway, that type of thing.
And Shazam, you know, she said there was one kind of thing that our family really does that you didn't mention, and that's athletic competitions. Or just centering around some sort of activity. And she said, you know, I know that a lot of people might do kayaking or do hiking while they're in a location, but they actually make it the focus of a trip. Like they might learn a new activity like climbing, right? And introduce her kids to that and really focus on it the entire like week or weekend that they're at a destination. And I do know when we're staying at campgrounds, if there's like that, like the mud, you know, the mud man or whatever.
The mud madness man.
Mud runner or whatever.
Boy, you just showed our audience that we don't know anything about that word.
There's always
tough
people.
Tough mudder.
There's always people at the campgrounds that are doing those and everything. So that is, I actually have a friend that runs marathons in different cities and she's stayed at campgrounds when
if
she's done that.
If you have little kids, your whole life is tough mudder. I don't need to pay somebody to get all tough and muddy.
Yeah, to get all muddy and messy.
No offense to anyone who does that. I'm just jealous.
And then Heather mentioned that they used to do athletic challenges also, like triathlons, but not as much anymore. Now she wants to do Michigan lighthouses, and she said that would be a great trip with her mom in tow. And Gretchen wants to do a Lincoln-themed trip. So go to the forum.
I want to come along on all those trips.
I know, they're fun. So go to the forum and add your great idea or see the other ideas that people have shared.
We want to keep these threads bouncing. You know, we want to keep them alive. And just if you think of a thematic trip, even if it's a month from now, go back, find that thread, add it there, and it'll become a resource for all of the people on our really fun, exciting, great forum.
Yeah, it's very inspirational. It's just
and Shazam
fun.
Did actually go back later on that thread and say that my surfing-themed trip actually did fit into her idea of more of an athletic type trip.
Oh, okay.
So
all
she
right.
did
so
approve,
she was
actually.
Like, all right, well, you guys are a little athletic.
Maybe she was worried she was being like a little cranky.
No.
I don't think she was.
I think that she really loves that sort of an experience with her children. You can see that it's something that she feels like she is giving to them. And I love to see that even on her Instagram account. She's like, you know what? I'm dragging these girls hiking whether they like it or not.
She's a high energy kid, if you ask me.
Yeah, she'd exhaust us. That's for sure. We'll have to invite her along on our trips and get her to like get us out of bed in the morning.
Yeah,
get going,
her
people.
At 6 a.m. Time for a hike, kids. Let's go.
Yeah, let's go. All right. So that's our forum thread of the week. Stay tuned. We will be back in a minute with greetings from Charleston, South Carolina.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's time for our feature topic, greetings from Charleston, South Carolina. And we're going to break this into three segments. And the first segment is sponsored by our friends at Good Sam.
Now, we have been members of Good Sam since we started RVing. I think it was 6 years ago, or is it seven?
I joined Good Sam immediately, pretty much.
Okay, right. And every single year, we have saved money with our membership.
Yeah, and for me, basically, the reason is that we go to enough Good Sam parks every year that 10% discount pays for the membership.
Right, and then you also buy enough things at Camping World that you get your
I
little discount
like
there.
I do like to take my little trips to Camping World. I get my discount there. I love my free issues of Trailer Life as well.
Right. So you can also save on fuel at the Pilot Flying J's. You can save on, you get a free annual 8-point RV inspection. You also get free dump station privileges. And we were filling up at Flying J.
And we saw somebody using those privileges.
Yeah, there were RVs over there dumping. And so if you're one of our listeners who really likes to do more dispersed camping or some of the dry camping like Brett, and he's talked about finding those dump stations in the past. Well, this might be a real bonus for you to be able to dump for free and not to have to find a place that you can pay. You get propane discounts. You get coupons in the mail. So it's really a good deal if you're an RVer.
Do you know why else I really, really love Good Sam?
Why?
Because we do a lot of writing for them.
Yeah, that's true.
So we've been writing for Trailer Life. We've been in the Good Sam Travel Guide. So
yeah, they have publications, and we like that. We like that
they have some good old-fashioned print publications.
Yeah, that lines up in our wheelhouse. So you can go to goodsam.com/RV Family Travel Atlas, and they have a special deal for our listeners. If you want to sign up for a Good Sam Club membership, you pay $25, but you get a $25 camping coupon. So that means that the first campground that you stay at, that's a Good Sam park, you're going to turn in that $25 camping coupon, and you're going to break even on your membership right there. And the rest of it's just gravy for
absolutely.
The rest of the year.
One of the best deals in the RV world. We recommend that all of our listeners become Good Sam members. We are, we have been, and we will continue to be.
All right. So let's dive into talking about sort of downtown historical Charleston.
Yeah. Now, you broke this down into three really nice different segments. So let's tell everybody what we're going to do. First, we're going to have a segment. We're going to talk some interesting historical facts about downtown Charleston, and we're going to talk about some of the recommended tours that we did. Then we're going to break and come back, and we're going to talk about forts, plantations, and beaches. Lots of stuff combined there. And then we'll come back for another segment, and we'll talk about the great places that we ate. We'll go over some of the amazing food, and we'll share some of the resources we used to plan our trip. All right, so let's talk downtown. You put together a really nice list of interesting historical firsts, things that Charleston did first.
Well, we were touring downtown in a couple of different capacities that we'll talk about a little later. And, you know, by the end of the first couple of days in Charleston, we actually had a conversation where we talked with each other about how seriously they seemed to take their culture of tours. Like, we were really impressed with the quality.
I felt like the three different tour guides we had were like college level professors in terms of their knowledge of what they were talking about.
And I took another tour in addition that you didn't come on. I went on a culinary food tour, and it was the same type of thing. It was just chock full of information. Now, I found on the internet, this was really random when I was just kind of looking at some stuff about Charleston, there was a great editorial in the Post and Courier about the rigorous guidelines, testing, and continuing education that Charleston requires of all of their tour guides in order to be licensed. And it was like all of the pieces like fell together for me. I was like, oh my gosh, we said that.
So
we
have quality control on their tour guides. And you could see it. I mean, we went from tour to tour. We were blown away each time. And I know that some people go, oh, these tours are touristy. And I don't think our podcast listeners are that way. I think a lot of our podcast listeners are more than willing to go on a great tour. We love these types of tours. And we just really don't think of them as being cheesy or touristy. And in Charleston, they are not.
No, we're Northeasterners, and we couldn't believe the extent to which visiting Charleston, you know, we've grown up around Boston and Philadelphia, around very historical cities that have like, I mean, this is the beginnings of our country. Well, Charleston is the southern version of that. Just like in Philadelphia, you're going to feel like you're walking in the footsteps of your founding fathers. The same thing happens when you visit Charleston.
Yeah, and I was not quite prepared for that. You know, I really didn't know that by the end of the trip, I would really start thinking of Charleston as an equivalent to Boston in terms of the richness of its history dating back to, you know, pre-American Revolution.
Yeah, and so over and over again on these tours, we kept hearing, oh, Charleston was the first this, Charleston was the first that. And I almost couldn't keep track of it all. And I was like, really? So thanks to the Los Angeles Times, like I was Googling for the first because I wanted to make a list because I couldn't remember all of them. Well, guess what? There was an article in the Los Angeles Times about how Charleston has all these firsts.
Don't you love it when you're just proved right?
And I was like, oh, okay, good. So this is like, this is really true. These tour guides weren't just full of it.
It wasn't just like we got the good ones.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I think that pretty much any tour you take, you're going to get a high quality tour.
So this is an example of some of the things that Charleston was the first at, okay? It was the home of America's first female portrait artist, Henrietta Johnson, in 1707. America's first theater was the Dock Street Theater in 1736. And remember, we saw that.
The theater tradition in Charleston is very rich. And what I read about that is that there's this connection to Restoration England, because Charleston is named after King Charles II. And that's a famous period in the history of English theater. And a lot of the people that came over and founded the city really wanted to bring that high-quality theater to Charleston.
All right. And the South's first newspaper, the South Carolina Gazette, was founded in 1739. I love this one. America's first fire insurance company.
I just like, love insurance companies.
Fire insurance company. America's first museum, first official museum in 1773. And the first board of directors for that museum were, I think, four of our founding fathers, four of the signers of the Declaration of Independence.
Lots of art and culture in Charleston.
So America's first chamber of commerce in 1773. And we were actually there as guests of the CVB. So here, all these years later,
Do you think they were hosting bloggers back then?
I don't know. But they're still going, and they're still showing off their city. The first passenger railroad train in 1830. And I have to say, when we were on the pirate tour and she mentioned that, the first passenger railroad train, I thought, that can't be right. I mean, I kept thinking that. That can't be right. You didn't have the first.
You're also thinking it's a pirate lady with a parrot on her shoulder telling me this. You're like, how good is this information? But then you realize this woman's got a PhD in Charleston history, for goodness sake.
The first shot fired in the Civil War, of course, at Fort Sumter.
Literally fired at Fort Sumter.
The first submarine attack in 1864.
Wow.
Right? The first city to have a preservation society. And that is my last first, because I think that what it does is it shows that full circle. The first preservation society. Preservation societies are so concerned with just keeping the historical fabric of a place alive, generation after generation. And Charleston's done that.
It's a fascinating city. And there's a sense in which all cities are fascinating, but This is really one of our great American cities. And if you have any interest in history, you're going to love going to Charleston. And I just want to say it now. We just absolutely fell in love with this city.
So after having said how great these tours were and how much we learned about history, let's talk specifically about the tours that we did and that we ended up really loving so much. So what was the first recommendation?
The Palmetto Carriage Works. And this was recommended as one of the top tours to take if you want a carriage tour.
I asked a lot of people. I quizzed local after local.
You always do. And I just found, first of all, I just find a carriage tour to be like really relaxing. And it's like a fun, unique experience for the boys. They get to kind of like people watch. I really got a rich history lesson, and our tour guide on this was just awesome. And he was younger than we were.
Yeah, and you asked him afterwards.
I wanted to know more about him.
And he said, he studied history in college.
I said, did you study history in college? Because this guy just knew his stuff inside and out. And it wasn't just like the quirky little trivial things. I mean, he was really giving us a history class.
Yeah, and so the Palmetto Carriage Works is actually the oldest carriage tour in the city. So they, of course, tout that because people in Charleston love to be the first at anything, okay? The tour is under an hour, and you might take one of any three routes because the city has this lottery system to disperse the congestion of carriage
rides. They don't want too many carriages out at once, so you actually go to this checkpoint, and they tell you, you're on number one, you're on number two, you're on number three.
Yeah.
So you don't know which of the three you're going to get. We did number one. We had friends that did number two. They loved theirs just as much as we loved ours. Number three is a bit of a mystery to me. but I assume they're all pretty much equally awesome, or people would probably complain.
Yeah. Now, you can also get from them a combo of a carriage tour and a harbor tour, okay, when you're there buying your ticket. And you can take the harbor tour at a completely different time during your stay. You don't have to schedule it at that point.
One of the things we wanted to do, and we just could not do everything. And obviously, this is just our intro to Charleston, and we're going to be back.
Right. And the bartender, actually, at Pagoon's, Smokehouse, highly recommended the Harbor Tour. He said he loved it. So if we go back.
And he was a transplant.
Yeah,
he said he was like not jaded. Like he's still just, you know, he and his girlfriend still were just doing a lot of the historical tours in the area.
He wanted to suck out that history of the area, even though he was living there. He said he didn't want to not do any of the touristy stuff just because he was too cool for school. He was a really nice guy.
The barkeeps and the cooks and the chefs we met were all like really smart and interesting too.
You know what? I don't think it's about being smart and interesting. I think it's about being friendly, and it's that Southern hospitality that we experience when we go down there, where when you talk to somebody, they're willing to have a conversation with you
and
really
give
engage
you great
with you.
Recommendations.
Yeah, so I really think it's more
where
of
you
us
come
experiencing
up here in New Jersey
that.
And you ask somebody for information. It's like, I don't want you to know that.
Yeah, I'm not giving you my insights.
I don't want to tell you where I eat because you might eat there.
Yeah. So then also our second tour recommendation is the Charleston Pirate Tours.
The boys' favorite.
Yes.
So my favorite was the carriage. The boys' favorite was that pirate tour. It was really fun.
Yeah, there's two different things that you can do on the pirate tour. You can take the pirate tour for adults, which is what we did, and our kids still enjoyed it, but it was really, really historical and full of facts, and it was geared towards adults, although they were very sensitive when they were talking about certain topics to use euphemisms, like so that kids didn't catch
about,
on.
Like, death and pirates.
Well, other things, too, that pirates can get up to. She was careful about that. So that was very nice of her. But there is actually a kid pirate tour that has like a scavenger hunt, and they keep it really loose and friendly.
And the parrot is on the tour guide's shoulder no matter which tour you take.
Yes.
And so I like it when tour guides have parrots on their shoulders.
That's a favorite for you?
It's a favorite for me, particularly with my prime lenses on my camera.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to get some good parrot shots.
Now, this is a 2-hour walking tour of sort of historical downtown Charleston.
The boys did great, though.
They did.
They really did great. They do well on tours.
Yeah, there was enough stopping places and everything. But I really recommend, I mean, the city is so walkable, and sometimes you can just think, oh, I can like kind of walk around and see all this stuff. The tour, that walking tour gave us a lay of the land. So I would highly recommend doing a carriage tour and a walking tour within the first part of your visit. And I think then that you'll see other things, and it will help you make decisions about where you want to go from there.
I think that's a great point. It might be counterintuitive on your first day of a trip to do a walking tour and then do a carriage tour. But you're so right, and I'm glad you said that, because I felt situated in this city for the rest of the week we were there. And that's not a strong point of mine, to feel geographically situated.
No.
And then like when I went back later in the week to do some photography, I really knew where I was and where I was going and some of the history of the place.
All right, our third tour recommendation is at the Old Exchange Building and Provost Dungeon Tour. Now, they keep this sort of museum. It really is like framed like a museum. They keep it in the period of the time of the British occupation.
And the guide was also in period dress.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this might not sound kid friendly. The boys loved this, and it was very kid friendly because you go into a dungeon.
Yeah. And the top floor is all like self guided. You walk around. It feels very much like Philadelphia up there,
like
to
Liberty
me.
Hall
Liberty Hall. It was very much like that, with like the documents and chairs and stuff set up. Then what happens is, I think it's like on the hour or on the half hour, you can take the elevator down to the dungeon, and there is a gentleman there who in period costume, and he likes to use, I think, a period accent too.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. He shows you, there's this big relief map, which is really cool, of what the walled city looked like at the time. He gives you that sort of background about why Charleston was being occupied by the British during the Revolutionary War.
He talked a lot
War.
About the 2 years that it was occupied by the British. I think it was 2 years, right?
Mm-hmm. And then you go around the corner into the dungeon, right? And they have like the fake mannequin.
They look like the Pirates of the Caribbean type mannequins.
In
which
jail.
The boys really liked that,
yeah.
You know? And it wasn't cheesy or corny. It really kind of brought the place alive.
Yeah. And then you could go and you could look down into the smoke, you know, the place where they kept the gunpowder and everything. The name of that is escaping
magazine.
Me right now. Yeah, the magazine. God, we had to look that up one night. I don't know why that name doesn't stick in my head. But you could look down and see where they stored all of that. It was pretty cool. So I recommend that
building.
You could
also see how the entire city, how there's water only so many feet below ground level in the city.
There, that is an actual piece of the old seawall.
Right.
Under well, there
only one
in
of
the
a few that still exists.
Yes.
Exist,
yes.
Think.
So when you're down there, you actually get to see the old seawall and what the very little that's left of it. So that was a cool experience.
Yeah, and that
also
was not a long tour too. So if you have small kids, that's a good one. And I don't think the whole thing was less than an hour.
Yeah,
half hour, 45 minutes.
It was really a half hour. Yeah, I really feel like
it was not a long tour. Very recommended for kids under 10, even kids 5 or 6 years old.
Okay. Now your other option for tours is, there are 6 historical house museums in Charleston. That's a lot. And I don't think many people do them all in a trip. But you can look at the descriptions, and I'll put in the show notes a link to the Charleston Visitors Bureau list of the different house museums. We did not do these tours because
we ran out of time.
We have 3 young children. Come on.
We only had 5 full days there. We packed in a lot, but we didn't get to do everything.
But I felt like on the carriage tours, you at least saw some of them, and they gave you a little bit of background about the historical houses. So it's like we saw them from the outside, and then if you have the time, you can go inside. And you'll want to pick different ones depending on what you want to see, because some have original furnishings, some don't. Some, you know, have some older elements, some have been updated a little bit more.
And if your kids like to jump off furniture, you might want to avoid this tour.
Avoid that one. Or, you know, find a babysitter.
Why do our kids just love to jump off furniture?
But they don't do that. And, you know, we have to give a shout out to our kids for being awesome on tours, because
they
really
are. Awesome on the tours.
Yeah.
And we're not – I'm not saying they're awesome all the time, but they I think they like tours.
Yeah.
They do. They learn a little. They like to stretch their legs and walk around. Many kudos to our kids for doing well on all of those tours that
all
we
right.
did.
So the moral of that story, those are the tours that we took or that we know other people took and highly recommend, but there are a million to choose from. The point is you need to choose one. I really believe that. I feel like you need to experience the city through a tour.
You could just go to Charleston and be all about the food or all about the music or all about the shopping. If you don't get some of this history, you're really just missing a pivotal part of the Charleston experience.
All right. So we will be back in a minute to talk about the forts and the plantations and the beaches that we visited outside of historical downtown Charleston. Stay tuned. Award-winning Yogi Bear's Jellystone Parks have everything your family needs to make long-lasting camping memories.
Whether you are an RV enthusiast, enjoy the comfort of a cabin, or prefer tent camping, Jellystone Parks have first-rate accommodations, amenities, and activities.
From amazing water zones to mini golf, wagon rides, themed weekends, and appearances from Yogi Bear and friends, you'll see that family fun is the main attraction at Jellystone Campgrounds.
And with over 80 locations in the United States and Canada, you can have a quality camping experience that is also close to home.
Visit campjellystone.com to find a Jellystone park near you.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's time to dive into our second segment about Charleston, South Carolina, which is just one of our favorite American cities. And now we're going to talk about forts, plantations, and beaches. We crammed a lot into our visit, and if you go, we want you to cram in a lot too. So why don't we start with Fort Moultrie? That's not a bad place to start your sightseeing.
We didn't start it there. We started by going out to Fort Sumter. Later on, when we went to Fort Moultrie, we both agreed. I think I brought it up and you were like, that's so funny. I was thinking the same thing. We both agreed that we would have liked to have visited Fort Moultrie first, because it really situates you nicely in the harbor area. I feel like when you're in Fort Moultrie, you can see Fort Sumter. So you can kind of get a perspective on that better, and you can see downtown Charleston, and you just kind of like, I don't know.
You're totally right.
Laid it out for me.
You get a view of how everything is laid out, and you would think that heading out on the boat to Fort Sumter would give you that, but it didn't as much.
No, I wasn't as oriented.
It was just like, you're on a boat and there's water, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember him saying, oh, there's Fort Moultrie over there, and I'm like, where?
Where?
Okay, but when you're at Fort Moultrie, you so clearly see Sumter. And also, it somewhat follows the narrative of the Civil War if you go to Moultrie first, because the federal troops were at Moultrie, and when South Carolina seceded, they did not feel safe there. Mm-hmm. So they took off and secretly went to Sumter, and then what would become the Confederates attacked
yeah, there.
And those were the first shots fired in the Civil War. So if you're finding that story of interest, you know, by starting at Moultrie and then going to Sumter, you're also following the narrative a little. Now, I think you too, though, you took Wes out.
I did.
It was a little hot for him.
That was the hottest day there, and we were there at about 12:30, which is nap time. So he didn't hang as long, and I said, let me take you back to the car. We'll get a drink,
rip the boys away. And I have to say, like, it's almost ridiculous to say, oh, which one's better, Sumter or Moultrie, because you need to do both. I mean, they are really a pairing in my mind. But I found Moultrie even more fascinating than Sumter, which I think it's fair to say Sumter's way more famous, because Fort Moultrie has history stretching from the Revolutionary War, pre-Revolutionary War, Revolutionary War, all the way to World War II. And it has this very rich, layered, complicated history. And the way they break down the fort is that different parts of the fort are set up to represent different historical periods. So the fort was used during the American Revolution. It has history from the Civil War. It has history from World War II. And it was laid out really, really nicely in a really interesting way.
Yeah,
and there was cannonballs and cannons. And I have to say, Max and Theo just absolutely loved checking out the cannons and the cannonballs.
Yeah, they were writing every night for school. Like, we had them writing essays at night about what they had done during the day. And both of them that night were talking about how many men had a man, each of those cannons, how heavy those cannonballs were. Like, those details they knew, and they actually put in their writing for the fourth that night. And for first graders to retain, like, that 20 men had to work the cannon, that it was this many pounds. It was pretty impressive.
And as opposed to Sumter, too, there's a lot of the underground part of the fort that you can go down and you can see where the gunpowder was stored. And there's all these kind of cool little passageways. And it feels more like you're in a secret functioning fort than maybe Sumter did to some degree. So now when you're at Fort Moultrie, you need to realize you're out on Sullivan's Island. And there is a beautiful stretch of beach that starts right next to the fort. And we actually literally ended up parking right next to Fort Moultrie and walking up to the beach, right? I mean, we were right next to it.
Yeah, you have to park on the little side streets to go to any of the beaches along Sullivan's Island. And we actually had driven up. We were like looking at the different entrances. And then we said, well, let's just go back down to the entrance right there by the fort. So we did. We parked along the side of the road. And it's this really beautiful little path that takes you all the way down. So that end of the beach, I feel like, was a little more quiet and set apart than the rest of the beach was on Sullivan's Island.
Yeah, and Stephanie says a beautiful path. There was actually a nature trail, and it was deeply wooded, and it's just this really lovely walk up to the beach. And
then it warned you about some sort of coyotes on the – and I was like, okay, well, after seeing that sign, I didn't want to go down the nature trail.
So we did Moultrie, and then we went to the beach.
Yeah.
Right next door. We had all our beach stuff, and it was a great 1-2 punch for a full day of activity. Though it's because it's a harbor beach, the waves are very tiny, and I assume for the most part they always are very tiny there. So initially Max and Theo were like, oh, we like Folly Beach better, which we'll talk about in a second because there were waves. But then they kind of dropped that, and they had a blast, and the water was so safe and swimmable for them and even for Wesley. The waves just were not big enough to create any worry or concern about the kids swimming or splashing
And there
around.
Were dolphins.
The second we walked onto the beach, there were dolphins, and
yeah,
the boys flipped
out
and got really excited. And they made sandcastles, and they built their own fort, and we just played on the beach all day. We played wiffle ball. We played catch. We just had a lovely, lovely beach day on Sullivan's Island.
All right, so we mentioned Fort Sumter. Now, this is an MPS site.
As is Moultrie.
Mm-hmm, but it's a little bit of a different type of place than a lot of MPS sites, okay? So because it is out on an island that is inaccessible by, like, bridge, like Sullivan's Island is, or by road, you have to take a ferry from the sort of the NPS like headquarters, Fort Sumter headquarters.
Which has a great bookstore and historical
a setup with all of the art
which
artifacts.
Which is right in downtown Charleston.
Yeah, so you can take the ferry from there. And you have to take one of the scheduled ferries throughout the day. And I think that there's 3 or 4 scheduled times. But when I was talking to the woman on the phone planning our trip, she told me that the quietest time is the 9:30 ferry. She said, if you get here for the 9:30 ferry, you know, that's definitely the least crowded of the trips. And then the nice thing about the 9:30 ferry is that you also get to participate
in the flag raising ceremony
once you get out there.
Yeah, and the flag I have to say, the participating in the flag raising ceremony was my favorite part about visiting Fort Sumter. It was really lovely. It's a huge American flag. The park ranger actually has visitors holding the flag, positioning the flag before she raised it up. It was lovely, and I took some great I don't want to say I took some
but you just did.
I took some photos that I liked of the flag raising.
Yeah, and she went over some of the different flag just like caretaking and everything and the rules and the proprieties around the American flag, which is nice for the kids to hear about also. So you take the ferry out to the island, you listen to an historical talk on your way out, and then once you get to the island, you're free to roam about for about an hour before the ferry returns back to the mainland.
And we could have spent more time there, but an hour was sufficient.
Oh, yeah, I think so. It was a nice amount of time. We actually wandered down to, like, the sandbar area
end. If you go, do that, because you could easily miss that. But there is this kind of, like, lovely little grassy sandbar area, and you could kind of walk right down there, right to the water. And it's just nice that they let you down there. It was very pretty down there.
And we also saw dolphins from there, which, again, the kids were wild about. Like, they loved the dolphin spotting was a big deal. All right. So, also, there are junior ranger badges available at this location. They have a scavenger hunt. So, they give you an activity sheet, and it's like you can pick four activities out of them.
And we usually do those. But the forts were so captivating to our boys that, like, we didn't need to, if that makes sense. Like, sometimes we do it to get them interested in what we're doing, but their interest was so immediate and passionate right away. We were just like, we don't need to do the ranger program.
Yeah, here. You know, sometimes I think, too, it's just nice to let kids soak things in a little bit. And we had been doing a lot of tours. We had been giving them a lot of information.
True.
And, you know, on the ferry ride would be the time when you would go over some of that stuff, like on the ferry ride back or on the ferry ride out there. And I was like, you know what? They want to, like, look over the side of the boat. Like, they wanted to enjoy the ferry ride. And I'm like, I'm not going to do it. You know, they just weren't up for it. And that's okay. I'm fine with that. So, you know, and speaking of tours, let's move on to the Magnolia Plantation.
But I just want to reiterate. Do both. Do Moultrie and Sumter. Really, it is worth squeezing them both in, okay?
All right, so on to the Magnolia Plantation. All right, again, this is something that there are many plantations that you can visit while you were in Charleston. Boone Hall is another one that is super popular. You know, we didn't have time to do them all, and you probably won't either. But Magnolia Plantation and Gardens is a really great choice. We were very impressed. Most of all, we were impressed with the train tour.
Again, a tour. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the train tour around the plantation was so interesting. We saw alligators. We saw all kinds of wildlife on the way. Great photo-taking opportunities. The boys, this might have been one of the highlights of their entire trip, seeing the alligators so close up on that tour.
They loved that tour. They actually recommended it. We were camping with friends, and they were going on and on about it to their one of their buddies who's a little bit older than them, but still, you know, a kid. And it was so funny because then that family, they went and they did the tour. Everybody was raving about the tour, but the funny thing is they overheard a conversation between the kids. They were trying to figure out whether they had the same tour guide and how funny she was.
And they realized that they did.
Yeah, they were like super excited that they had the same tour guide. And this was actually kid conversation. This wasn't conversation instigated by the adults.
Adorable.
It was really cute.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that we picked Magnolia because of the emphasis on the outdoor gardens, and there's just a lot of room to roam and for the kids to kind of play and really stretch their legs as opposed to some of the other plantations.
There's a petting zoo there, which, again, the kids wrote extensively about.
They loved it. Yeah, to me, it's like a petting zoo, but to them, they loved it.
It had deer walking around, and they were petting the deer. It also had some snakes and, like, a terrarium kind of an area and everything. So there were turkeys all over the place. They got a kick out of it, goats, you know, your typical thing, but they loved it. The walking paths were gorgeous. We spotted more alligators on the walking path.
Very close up. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were up on a bridge looking down, and we could see its whole body underwater. We were that close to it.
Oh, yeah. He was totally staring at us.
And there's photos of so many of these things on our Instagram gallery. So if you're not following us on Instagram, head over. We have literally dozens of Charleston pictures there.
Now, we chose not to do the house tour. Again, we were making choices because we had taken so many tours. We honestly didn't. Our kids were not burned out by the tours we took. We did not want to burn them out. We didn't want to push them past the point of no return. However, our friends did do the house tour with their two children, and they loved it. They said that it was great. And in fact, I think it was Philip's highlight. He said he loved the house tour. So those are add-ons. I would highly recommend adding on the train tour, but you can also add on the house tour.
So can we do the house tour when we go back to Charleston in the fall?
Well, we may, but I want to get to Boone Hall.
I do too.
So
beautiful spot.
You know,
for photos.
That's going to be high on the list for me when we go back to get to Boone Hall.
All right, can we talk Folly Beach?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, we loved Folly Beach. If you're staying at the campground at James Island County Park, you also get to park there for free. Folly Beach is a little bit more like the beaches we're used to in New Jersey. There was some surf there. There were some waves to play around in. One thing that was awesome about it was the parking was so easy. We literally parked right up at the edge of the dunes and walked right down onto the beach. The water was warm, great for swimming. Again, wiffle ball on the beach, picnic on the beach. We had a lovely day.
And they had good restroom facilities, which is always good when you're traveling with kids, especially. So now there's also a little town there, Folly's Beach, and we drove through it to get to the beach. I think we got gas there. We didn't spend much time exploring the town. However, our friends did. And I was really struck by the fact that they said at one point, you know, we just keep getting drawn back to there. They actually returned, I think, like three times. They really liked it.
There's a fishing pier there as well.
It just has this sort of seaside town feel to it. So it really is the beachy side.
Beautiful homes.
Of Charleston, I felt like. It was a little bit, it was very low-key. They ate at a restaurant there, and they went back again a second time because they really liked it.
I felt
it.
Like I could live here.
Yeah,
like,
that's, I think that that was it.
There.
It was
like,
very livable.
I could live here.
Mm-hmm.
Sullivan's Island, the homes were expensive.
Right.
And so really kind of big and beautiful.
And I felt like Sullivan's Island, too, was just more built up. It was just so much more built up. It was really almost like more of a suburby feel because it's right near Mount Pleasant.
Right.
So it really is more of where some people are living year-round and everything. So it
Folly
had a different
Beach had just that little bit of sleepiness,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
that was nice. Maybe
yeah.
it's not that way in the summer when the kids are off school, but
right.
it was when we were there.
All right. So those are all of our recommendations for touring the forts, plantations, and beaches in the Charleston area. We are going to come back and we're going to talk about food and books. Stay tuned.
And now it's time for a sponsored message from our friends at RVTrader.com.
If you've been dreaming about RVing but aren't quite sure where to start, RV Trader can help you find the right RV for you and your family.
Check out their blog, which has helpful articles on new units entering the market, travel tips, events, and other helpful resources.
Also, icons on the homepage will help you search for towable units or motorhomes, and you can select a specific manufacturer or price range to narrow your results and find RVs near you.
And lastly, if you're looking to sell your current RV or trade it up for another one, RVTrader.com can help you do that too. Add photos, a description, and contact info, and buyers will contact you directly for more information.
RV Trader has everything you need to find or sell your RV.
To start your search today, visit RVTrader.com. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are having a great time talking about Charleston, South Carolina. It is just one of our favorite new places, an incredible place to take an RV trip. Now it's time to talk about food. I knew the food would be good. I knew we were going to be in for some culinary treats. I did not know that this would become my favorite food city in America. And I'm not saying I've been to every one, but out of the ones I've been to, this was the best food experience I've had.
Yeah, and who knows? I mean, we just got lucky, maybe, that we just hit some real highlights here.
Stop it. There was no luck. You did your research.
Yeah.
I heard you asking people over and over again, trying to get the real insider intel.
I did. And I went on the Charleston culinary tour, and I really got a lesson on the last 30 years of the food renaissance that's happened in Charleston and sort of how it came to be a food destination when it really wasn't just a generation ago. And that was so interesting. And I highly recommend, you know, experiencing that when you're in Charleston.
I want to say, too, that for our older boys, Max and Theo, they really enjoyed the culinary experience. They really enjoyed eating on this trip, I think more so than they have in the past because it wasn't just all cheeseburgers and fries for them. I mean, they were chanting the names. of some of these restaurants by the end of the trip.
The very first time. The very first time they've ever done that, where they've like begged to return to a place that they really loved.
Yeah. Stephanie did a great blog post just this week. It's up on our blog, and it walks through these six different restaurants. And I've been working hard to become a better food photographer, and you can see some of the results of my food photography there with some of the new prime lenses that I'm using. So please check out that post. But right now, let's walk through these six restaurants. And look, we know we're just scratching the surface. I mean, somebody else could have done another six restaurants.
Everybody's top 10 list is different. There's a few that show up over and over again. And actually, obviously, one of the mainstays, one of the culinary sort of institutions of Charleston is Magnolia's. And that was at the top of our list. And actually, on the first day, we got there to eat lunch. But we had been on a two-hour walking tour. It was in the middle of Wes's nap time. And I looked in and I saw sort of the white tablecloths.
Too genteel.
And we actually stood outside and we went back and forth about it. We were like, well, our kids really can behave well sometimes in restaurants. And then we were like, but we've also pushed them a little far.
And then you looked across the street and saw Pagoon Smokehouse. And you were like, that place is supposed to be awesome too. You walked over, looked at it. Way more casual, way more comfortable. Not a lot of people in there at that moment we were there.
We needed.
We got a huge kind of corner table to ourselves. We had just like that little bit of extra room that's nice to have when you're eating out with kids. And oh my, I could say every single one of these was a highlight. Pagoon's was awesome. What did we order?
So we tried their pork belly sliders with like a house-made kimchi slaw, which was really great. Every single one of the things we ordered was a recommendation from the bartender. I told him, what do I have to taste when we're eating here?
Can I say something about kimchi slaw?
What do you know about kimchi?
I knew nothing about it. And in fact, when I ordered the sliders and I saw this kimchi slaw on it, I was like, I don't want that on my slider.
No,
I don't want
didn't.
Kimchi slaw. But then I had a taste of it and I was like, there's no other way to do this.
Yeah. Well, that's what Pagoon's was so good at, is convincing you that there's no other way to eat it at all ever. Right. So we had pork rinds there, and the pork rinds were topped with crumbled blue cheese and pickled celery.
I made a smart decision at this meal. I let you pick everything.
Yeah. If I order everything, if I order for the whole table, everybody's happier.
Well, yeah. I mean, and you get a really more of a genuine taste of the area.
Because
I might go towards something a bit more generic. You did a great job ordering at all of these places.
Now, the second place that's on our list to talk about is Smoke Barbecue.
Oh, my God. Smoke.
Which I visited on the culinary tour, and I had, and I'm not exaggerating, I don't say things like the best, but I had the best chicken wing of my entire life. And I swear right now on this podcast, I will never again order like a rubbery chicken wing doused in hot sauce.
Now, I looked at their Instagram gallery, and he had just won, I think, for best chicken wing in Charleston.
He did.
You know, we got backup on this when this is the best chicken wing.
He brines and then smokes and then flash.
Do you remember that guy's name, the chef?
Roland.
He's a magic man.
Yeah.
If you're listening, you're a magic man.
Roland, if you're listening to RV Family Travel.
Well, once we tell him he's on the show, he might listen.
So, you know, he brines it, he smokes it, and then he flash fries the wing before you're served it. So it has all the benefits of all three of those type of food preparations come together. It creates a phenomenal experience.
At the end of the day, it's just a gift to humanity.
All right. So the other thing that we ordered was his pastrami Reuben.
Oh, my goodness.
Which he said when I was on the culinary tour, he was like, that's our house specialty. It's so good, blah, blah, blah.
And Jersey girl was like, whatev.
How many pastrami Reubens have I had in my life? Countless, right?
New Jersey,
right,
the delis.
I've had pastrami Reubens at like famous New York delis, right?
That's right,
had pastrami Reubens everywhere. And he's telling me that his is amazing. It was amazing.
It was the best pastrami Reuben I've ever had. And however many pastrami Reubens you've had, you could double the number, and that's how many I've had.
Yeah, yeah.
It was fabulous.
He's very talented.
Oh, my God, mouth-watering. The flavor was bursting out of that sandwich. If there was one thing from all of these restaurants that we ordered, that if I could have it right now, if I could snap my fingers and have it at this podcasting table and eat it, it would be that sandwich.
Yeah. And I just, I don't know. Like, I feel like, how am I ever going to wait till we return to Charleston to eat like those wings or that Reuben again?
Because we're going to go back to
Charleston.
That's
hard
next
for me.
Fall, dear,
yeah, but I don't even want to wait until that. Like, I'm sad that that's not in our like life.
I'm going to throw it down right now, too. All these places were great. Smoke is my favorite.
Yeah.
And there's another reason why. It's really beautiful inside. It's just, it's like real eye candy there. And I had the camera out and the bar was beautiful. The wood was beautiful. Just, it just had a lot of character. You know,
yeah, it's
visual,
a good designed
character.
Interior, has a sense of humor.
Cozy.
Yeah, just kind of, it's nice. So then also, we ate at the Early Bird Diner. Now, this is not in the downtown historic Charleston area. This is out on Savannah Highway. So you are going to have to drive by like car dealerships and like strip malls, and you're going to see the Early Bird Diner, and you are going to wonder how you're ever going to eat breakfast anywhere else again in your life.
Yeah, this was the best breakfast joint I've ever been to. I'm sorry, it's better than anywhere I've been to in our state. And
yeah,
it almost physically pains me to say that.
Well, Southerners know how to do breakfast,
well,
and they
Jersey
do it the best.
Jersey diners are famous too. But,
yeah,
but this place just rocked. The boys were chanting the name of this place.
They wanted to go back for the pancakes. And the pancakes, I'm not a big pancake person because I'm a savory breakfast person, not a sweet breakfast person. So I don't really care for pancakes that much. But I tasted these and I was like, oh, these are special in some way.
You inquired.
I did. I talked to the waitress about it. And it was funny because she tried to pass off. She was like, oh, yeah, we put cinnamon in them. And I'm like,
like, there's something more
like,
to it.
Honey, you know, come on. You're not going to tell me you got cinnamon in your pancakes and you're going to think that that's why I like your pancakes. So I, in a very nice way, was like, well, it's not really the cinnamon. I mean, I taste it. I said, I really feel like there's a texture to them and a heft and just like I'm going to say mouthfeel.
They
because
had
that's
gravitas. These were pancakes with gravitas.
No, they didn't have gravitas. They had cornmeal. So I got her to
gravitas
finally
is Latin
admit
for cornmeal.
That they had cornmeal in them. And she's like, and then she said, and maybe some other things. So, you know, she wasn't giving it all away, but she did tell me that
she
there
thought
were
you
cornmeal
were a spy
in the pancakes. And I was like, oh, that's that more of that like grit,
then
that
we also
texture.
Got the waffles and chicken.
It's honey. It's
Chicken and waffles. Well, I ate the waffles first and then the chicken. And then you're like, you got to eat them together. You got to combine them into one bite and then dip them into the sauces. Oh.
It's about the combination, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, you need guidance at the table. I have to like put things together for you. Say like, this is the way it happens. And then there was also the country breakfast. It was like called the country hash, or I don't know. It's in the blog post. I forget what the exact name of it was, but that was like a biscuit and gravy concoction.
And all of these photos are up in that blog post too.
Yeah.
And again, really nice character and charm in this place. It just had like a nice vibe to it. It was very like, felt very local, very cozy.
All right.
A little bit of like a little pinch of hipster to it as well.
Now, the Hominy Grill is one that, again, was up with Magnolia's in terms of the number of people that would say, you have to go to Hominy Grill. And it is. It's a James Beard award-winning chef who owns the place and everything. And it is it's well-known and it is award-winning. And it was very good. It really was. The she crab soup that we had there was great.
We devoured it.
The biscuits are great. The boiled peanuts, the boys loved the boiled peanuts. I think that might have been the first time.
I happen to really love the shrimp and grits. I thought the shrimp and grits were awesome.
Yes, they were. And I don't know what it was. Like, I just felt like Early Bird Diner and like smoke barbecue took me to places that the Hominy Grill didn't.
Now, is the Hominy Grill more famous for breakfast? Is it? Because,
yeah, but
I mean,
it's really famous for its shrimp and grits and its she crab soup. It's famous for doing those low country staples in a little bit more of a deconstructed or rarefied kind of a way. So it is famous for the dishes that we ordered from there. And they were delicious. They were. But when we're thinking of where we're going to go back to, like, I don't know that the shrimp and grits made it into my, like, I have to have that right now list. But they were yummy. So
the soup did make it into my
yes. The she crab soup
list
was excellent, and our boys devoured that too. That bowl was gone right quick. All right. So the Siwi restaurant.
Now, this is near the Birds of, right across from the Birds of Prey. And we actually didn't visit this restaurant on this trip. One of our trips to Myrtle last year, we drove all the way down to the Center for the Birds of Prey, which is awesome. And we ate here, and it's right outside of Charleston.
Yeah, famous road food place.
This is in Michael, Jane and Michael Stern's road food. This was a phenomenal place as well. Maybe the best fried green tomatoes you've ever had.
Yeah, they're fried everything. Best fried everything there. They know how to fry
things. They fry you there.
They know how to fry, and they know how to make sides here. So if you want that okra side, right, that like all of those sides, like the like sweet potato, right?
Sides were the highlight.
Yeah. I think that you could go there. You could just order all their sides and
really
be really happy.
Really lovely outdoor seating area there as well. And just really nice. All these places have such character too. You know, it's like there's this visual aspect to all these restaurants that just makes them very cozy and comfortable and visually appealing as well.
All right. Our last meal in Charleston was at Page's Okra
Don't
Grill.
Say it that way.
That's
the
sad.
Last meal. Oh my God. Take me back.
All right. The Page's Okra Grill in Mount Pleasant. We were at Sullivan's Beach. We left. We were going to stop at Poe's Tavern because that's highly recommended. But the parking situation there was
we just couldn't park.
And so we just said, all right, fine. We'll keep going and we'll go to another place that we had heard great things about. And this place kind of prides itself on being like a locals family restaurant. And it was. It was very,
great
it had a really fun feel to it, really comfortable. Now, I felt like the food here was so rich. Like she's known, the chef is one of the Pages, one of the sister, it's like a sibling group. It's the sister who is the chef. And I think that she is known for her pimento cheese. And I got the, like, kind of like a BLT, a version of a BLT that was like a fried green tomato and bacon and the pimento cheese. I'm telling you, I couldn't even get through a half. It was so rich.
You didn't get through half. Shame on you, girl.
Good.
Now, I ordered a plate, chicken fried steak with a bunch of sides. I did get through it.
Yeah,
I had every bite of that, man. It was really, really good.
Yeah, and Theo had a corn dog, and he ate all that
corn
dog.
He was proud of his corn dog. It was a fun place, too. It was one of those places that's, like, so loud. It's like, who cares if your kids are being loud?
Yeah, we ate outside.
Loud in a nice way. Mm-hmm. Everything about it was nice. The service was nice. The food was very good, and the price points were really good as well.
Yes, that is true. And I felt like the price points on a lot of our food in Charleston was—
Nothing. You know, now that you say that, not one of these single places did I go, oh man, that was expensive.
Yeah,
you know,
it's an affordable place
New York,
to be
New
a
Jersey
foodie.
People. Yeah, good way to put it because we're just used to paying more for food that's not as good.
All right, so that's it. Those are our recommendations for restaurants. Now, we also want to give you some recommendations for books that we used and read to plan this trip.
Yeah, so if you're going to plan a big Charleston trip, you know we love doing like the pre-reading and the preparing. So for the kids, we love the Good Night series, and you're probably familiar with these. So there's Good Night for almost every state practically. There's Good Night for a lot of cities, a lot of famous places. So we had and we bought Good Night South Carolina and Good Night Charleston, and the boys love these. Even the older boys still really liked reading these before the trip and during the trip.
Well, they pretend that they're reading it to Wes, but really the nice thing is that they're identifying the places in it that we've been, and they always get excited about that. So they're like, woohoo, we went there, yay. So that's good.
And we're going to put all these books in our Amazon affiliates shop. So if you buy one of them, please buy it through our shop. We sure would appreciate it. The next one was the one I used the most during the trip. And it's for about, you know, a photography type book, but it's really so much more than that. It really became a guidebook to me. It's called Seeing Charleston, a field guide to photographing a world-class city by Ron Anton Rocks. And it's just delightfully written. He walks you through all the best places to take pictures, gives you tips on photography in general, tells you the best time to go to these places. And I read this book from cover to cover, even though I only made it to maybe four or five of the photo spots. And he did lead me to some of the spots where I got some of my favorite pictures of, water fountains, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. After that, we used the Moon Guide. And we really like moon guides. We've talked about them before. I have two. I have one for Charleston and Savannah by Jim Marekis, and then I have one for the entire coastal Carolinas by the same author. You probably don't need both. If you're going to be taking an extended road trip in North Carolina and South Carolina, get the Coastal Carolinas one because it also includes Charleston. But if you're focused in on Charleston, just get this Charleston and Savannah one, and I'm looking forward to using it for Savannah at some point soon. Now, the next one. I am really excited about this series of travel guides. They're called Wild Sam Field Guides. They've been around since about 2012. They've been getting a lot of media attention in kind of like hipster type circles. So they have these field guides to some of the kind of cooler, funkier American cities. Like they have Austin, they have Detroit, they have Brooklyn, they have San Francisco. So I grabbed the one for Charleston. This book is an absolute delight. It's like part travel guide, part almanac, part trivia, part history, part best of the city. And it's just been really fun to read. And Stephanie's grimacing right now because she knows I'm going to buy like every book in the series now. This was a must if you're going to Charleston. And even though it's sort of more, these are more prominent in sort of hipster type circles, it's actually like very much a throwback to kind of an old fashioned almanac or travel guide.
All right, and now the next one is, I think I made fun of the on the last
you
podcast.
You did make fun of me when this book showed up in the mail. I bought A Short History of Charleston by Robert Rosen, and it is a delightful history of Charleston. It has a lot of illustrations in it. It's quick. It's snappy. This guy's like a third generation
Charlestonian,
thank you. And he's also a lawyer in the city, but he's a really great, snappy, fun writer. And he goes through the history very briskly and really brings it to life. And, you know, he intros the book. He starts out by saying, like, you know, Charleston is not a city without sin. You know, and he's very much about pointing out sort of like, I don't know if I want to call it the dark side of Charleston, but
there is a very dark side,
you know, and from slavery to prostitution to whatever it is. And he's not afraid to talk about those things, but he does so in a really crisp, readable narrative. So again, highly, highly recommend that. Also, you might want to pick up the Charleston City Magazine, which we picked up while we were there and we really enjoyed.
Yeah. So when you get to any city, it's really good to look for the local publication, the weekly newspaper that says what, you know, music is playing at what places or whatever. You can really get a local feel for a culture by just picking up those free.
Oh, and boy, freebies. Do I pick them up. Yeah, you tell me that I pick up too many of them and the RV ends up littered with them.
Well, it does. By the end of a trip, there's no place for all of your resources. That's the problem. And I actually told you need to deal with that. You brought it up.
I know, but you know, it is a rich part of the travel experience for me, reading the local newspaper while I'm there, reading these travel guides. It makes the whole experience that much
more
interesting.
That's fine, but I need to be able to sit down on our dinette.
Oh, let's not exaggerate. It was just one side of the dinette covered in periodicals and books.
By the end of the trip, one side of the dinette was completely covered.
Well, our next RV is going to have a better
setup. I charged you. I said, you need to figure out a storage solution for this because I can't lose my dinette by the end of every trip. So you're supposed to be on that job.
So look, if you're the photographer, get the photography book. If you just want something fun and quirky, get the Wild Sam Field Guide. If you want more of a standard travel guide that's going to hit on every category, go to your Moon Travel Guides. If you want something for the kids, get one of the Good Night books.
And that is our greetings from Charleston, South Carolina episode. We hope you are as inspired to make a trip there as we are inspired to return sooner rather than later.
And don't forget to head over to Campground of the Week and listen to our full review of the campground at James Island County Park.
All right. And now we are going to close off by giving you a travel tip, an RV travel tip that is sponsored by Progressive Insurance. What is it this week?
Okay. Check to see if your pets are covered in case of an accident. Progressive's pet injury coverage protects your dogs and cats if they are in the vehicle and injured in an accident. It's free if you have collision coverage on your RV policy. Visit progressive.com/RV for more information.
Doesn't Maggie need pet coverage?
I want to insure after this episode.
You're going to insure everything.
These ads are working on me. After this episode, I want to insure my camera stuff and I want to insure Maggie.
All right, we'll be right back to wrap up the show.
Thank you so much to listening to this episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. Greetings from Charleston, South Carolina. It is a seductive city that will sweep you off your feet. It's a great place for an RV vacation. You need to put it way high at the top of your bucket list. Special thanks to Progressive Insurance, the Good Sam Club, Jellystone Parks and RV Trader for sponsoring great RV content for all you RV fools out there. And thanks also to the Charleston CVB and Charleston County Parks and Recreation Commission. They were awesome hosts. They really made us feel welcome. They helped us get all set up so we could explore the city.
Southern Hospitality.
And share all these great experiences with you. Book a trip to Charleston. You're going to love it.
All right. We will talk to you next week, and we'll see you at the campground.
See you at the campground.